This episode of the PHP Architect Podcast is brought to you by Microsoft Website Spark, a new program for web pros to help them grow their business and get access to Microsoft's tools for nearly no cost. Learn more and sign up for Website Spark at websitespark.com.
Welcome to another episode of the PHP Architect Podcast. I am Marco Tabini, your host. And before everything else, before you know who's on the line tonight with me, I just want you to know that there are some people on Twitter who happen to think that this podcast is not funny enough, that it is too boring, uninteresting, mundane, cliche. There's one thing that I want to say on behalf of PHP Architect to those people, and here it goes. One, two, three. Bite us! With me tonight are, let's see, Cal Evans. Hey, Cal.
Hey, Marco.
How's it going in the Netherlands?
As usual, it's dark. You know, I've not even bothered to open the blinds and look out there, but I assume everything is still there, so it's going great.
Well, awesome. Also with us is Davy Shafik. Hey, Davy.
Hey, Marco.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Special guest tonight, Nate Abel.
It's actually Avali, but that's okay.
Oh, is it? Okay, well, yeah. Special guest tonight. Oh, knock it off. Special guest tonight is Nate Abeli.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Excellent. Keith Casey is also with us.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
And last but not least, I'm not sure why she always ends up at the end of my list, is Beth Tucker.
I'm not sure why either, but I'll say hello anyways.
That's great. We have a packed show today for you. It's going to be difficult to make it fit inside our usual half-hour slot, so we'll make it go longer, because who cares? I think it's probably fitting to start with a quick recap of the most wonderful ZenCon, or as I like to call it, the most wonderful ZedCon, that took place earlier in October. And I figured that somebody who's actually been at ZenCon should be leading this discussion. So I'm happy to turn it over to Cal and to Keith. It's all yours, guys.
We had a great time. Well, I don't know about Keith, but I had a great time. It was very interesting to be at ZenCon this year and not have to work it. You know, it was I could relax and watch things follow, happen all around me, and so it was fun for me. A lot more fun than in previous years. What about you, Keith?
Oh, I actually had a blast too. I was in charge of some things, namely the UnCon this year, just like last year. It in some ways is a lot easier this year because we'd already had a successful year at it, so it went pretty smoothly, and there's a lot more interest. So in some ways, it went on autopilot. In some ways, it was a sort of a challenge, but it was a blast all the way around.
Yeah, the UnCon, a lot of people don't know the history of that. At OzCon 2006, Zach Grant actually ran an UnCon at OzCon, and I was attending, and I saw it, and I said, well, I'm going to steal that idea for ZenCon. And so the next year, we had the first one. I think it was 2007, we had the first one. And we were doing, I think Patrick Riley was in charge of it, and he did a good job for all of the support that I gave him, which was absolutely none. I mean, he was pretty much out there on his own. But he put something together, and people started talking about this thing called UnCon. And then the next year, you wrote me, I don't know, probably July, and said, here's the five reasons why Keith Casey should be in charge of the UnCon. And I mean, from then on, you've pretty much been Mr. UnCon. I mean, the stuff that you've been doing is just awesome, And I just wanted to say, at least for the one that you worked with me, thanks again, because it was great even then. But I mean, this year it was, you had a session that came together in response to another session that was happening at the regular con. So great job.
Wait, did he actually write to you referring to himself in the third person?
I don't believe he actually wrote to me in the third person.
Because that's the kind of thing he would do,
Keith would never do that. It sounds like he would do that.
Yeah,
yeah. Keith would not do that.
But it was this great email, you know, because I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do, and I get this email, and I'm like, Keith. Oh, I remember him. He's the guy with the monkey. Okay. Yeah, what the heck?
Nate, you were at ZenCon too, right?
I also was at ZenCon. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And say what you will about Microsoft, they know how to throw a party.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Do you actually remember the party?
It was awesome.
I remember the party bus on the way there, and I sort of remember the party bus on the way back.
Nate, do you remember going on stage?
Yeah.
Oh, but you
see,
do? Okay.
I was there, and Elizabeth Spence was there.
Yes.
The suppression team is going to have to be dispatched for that one.
Yes. And actually, the Microsoft, it was the Bing launch party, and it happened to be the same night that Windows 7 was coming out. So right at midnight, they said, hey, everybody here gets a free copy of Windows 7 Ultimate Super Duper Everything in the Kitchen Sink Edition. So it was kind of cool.
Right. I actually got two copies because I stole Helgi's out of his back pocket.
Oh, sweet.
It was the Bing launch
party. What were you doing in Helgi's back pocket?
It was just kind of sticking out there.
Wait a second.
It's got to be a better way to say that.
Wow.
So yeah, the Microsoft guys were out in full force at ZenCon, and I mean, you know, at Tech they were all over the place. I think when I counted at Tech, there were six or seven Microsoft employees there, and at ZenCon there had to be four or five that I know of, and of course Josh Holmes was at both of them, but. Yeah, he was our guest when we were in Dallas on the podcast. But you know, he's all over this, and he was one of the instigators for the bringing what turned out to be a good chunk of the speakers at ZenCon on a party bus up to San Francisco. And I didn't go, but it was very funny to me to watch those who did go try to make 8 o'clock sessions the next morning. I mean, this was just hilarious.
I got up just in time to clear my hangover and get to the shootout, actually.
The shootout was about 8 hours later.
Yeah, so, you know, I needed a little bit of recovery time there.
So let's talk about this shootout. What happened there?
I guess I'll talk about that. Basically, they had either kind of lead framework developers / evangelist community members and Nerf weapons. So it was myself representing CakePHP, David Zulka representing Agave, Matthew Weir of Finney. What's his actual Supreme Allied Commander?
Supreme Allied Commander.
Yes.
The Zend framework. Ed Finkler representing CodeIgniter. And Fabian, I'm probably going to butcher this, Potentier, representing Symphony. And we kind of had it out on stage along with some Nerf guns. I think people expected it to be a lot more confrontational than it ended up being. Really, it was more kind of us united against the crowd and shooting them.
So you guys hugged way too much.
You got to be kidding. There was almost a fist fight broke out. I mean, you guys at near the end started shooting that 40-inch plasma screen with the Nerf gun. The audio guy almost came over the soundboard to strangle you guys because that's his equipment. And I'm watching this going, this is not going to be fun.
Oh, so it was almost a fist fight between the developers and another guy. I mean, that's not.
Yeah, the audio guy was about to come up there.
Yeah, but it's Nerf and he's got, you know, a glass TV. What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, yeah.
Said the Wii developers.
Yeah, well, you know. But no, it was actually, we just kind of discussed our frameworks and turned out we agree on a lot more stuff, I would say, than we disagree on. So that was kind of the takeaway from that.
Cool. And what do you guys actually talk about?
Oh, what did we talk about? Let's see, some of the questions were, like, what do people have the most trouble with in your framework, or, you know, just general stuff like what is kind of describe the principles of the philosophies in which your framework is founded. There's one question from Will Sinclair, which kind of got everybody going a little bit. Like, is it okay? Ideas taken from other frameworks. That was one of them. But Will's question was, is it okay for community leaders to say, go vote on this poll or go, you know, vote for this particular thing? Like in NetBeans, for example, they held a poll saying, hey, what PHP framework should we support in our next release? And we and the Symfony guys went and said, hey, you know, we should go vote for our respective frameworks. Everybody go do that. Symfony won because, you know, they're more enterprisey and more people from them use NetBeans. But, and
you know what got me about that?
So I don't really care. What?
There's one thing that really got me about that question is he was saying, oh, is it right for, the, you know, to promote these polls and for projects to do that? And personally, I think that's one of the roles of a project lead. You're supposed to go and push your community and say, hey, look, here are the things that are going on, and to evangelize to people outside your community and say, hey, this is why this tool is good. This is why the system is good. Use it.
Right. And that's pretty much exactly the point that Ed Finkler made, and we all kind of agreed with him.
But you don't want to disagree with
Finkler. That question just annoyed me.
Okay, Marco, you go.
Yeah, I was just going to say you don't want to disagree with Finkler. It's not safe.
It isn't safe. And fortunately,
he scares me.
I didn't have to disagree with him to his face. he was saying something on stage at one point, and like I looked over at him and I kind of shook my head no, like, and pointed to him like, what's this guy talking about? And that kind of got a laugh. It's really so all you do on stage is get laughs. It's like, so I don't actually talk about anything relevant. Go ahead, Clark.
So you disagreed when he wasn't looking, so you're safe.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he'll find out about it now, and I'll have to go.
I was going to say, he was until now, you know. Now there's no telling.
Right, you know.
Well, it's been nice knowing you, Nate.
Yeah, I thought so.
Has it?
Okay. So I understand that
nobody comes to his rescue.
No, of course not. We leave him hanging.
This is the PHP Architect podcast. That's no one ever comes to anyone's rescue.
It's just the way we roll.
That's right.
Now, Nate, I understand that you made an interesting announcement this past week.
Right. So ZenCon was actually my last official appearance as a member of the Cake PHP team. Actually, yesterday. Monday. We spun off another framework project called Lithium, which was written from scratch based on PHP 5.3. And the launch went off without a hitch and got a lot of press and a lot of popularity, and things are taking off. So it's really exciting.
What's different about this framework?
Well, sorry, the laughing is unrelated to the question. What's different about the framework is basically, after working on Cake PHP for 4 years, it's like you come to love something so much that the problems and the deficiencies really kind of stand out in stark contrast to everything else that's awesome. So after 4 years of experience working on Cake, I said, okay, here's what's wrong with it. Here's what I don't like. So I kind of went back and re-architected everything from the ground up. So philosophically, everything's pretty similar, but obviously being based on 5.3, it takes advantage of namespaces. It takes advantage of closures, things like that. Like, actually, one of the first things I wrote for it was just like a test. It actually started life as just a collection of test scripts that kind of built and built and built, and suddenly I had something that I could work with. But one of the first things I wrote was the filter system, which actually uses closures to implement a design that's almost a little bit like aspect-oriented programming, where you can really easily make classes that don't know anything about each other talk to each other using closures. You can basically define a closure and use it to wrap around another method, so you can intercept the parameters coming in and the return value going out. and really affect how a method gets executed. So it's really, really powerful unless you do a lot of fancy stuff really elegantly. So that's kind of one of the foundational bases of the framework. So yeah, stuff like that, and just a bunch of fancy tricks.
Very nice. So, you know, continuing along this discussion, it seems that all of a sudden PHP 5.3 is finally getting a lot of attention. In the last week or so, NetBeans announced support for 5.3. Symfony 2.0 is going to be developed to be compatible with PHP 5.3, according to Fabien Potencier, who is the lead of that project. So it's almost like all of a sudden everybody's interested in 5.3, and all the frameworks are just jumping on the 5.3 bandwagon.
It seems like it took a while, but I think everybody's just finally reached that critical mass where it's just been building and building and building, and now it's kind of to the tipping point.
So
I actually think that it's now there's really, really good reason to move from PHP 4. And in the sense, really terrible, but like people are going, well, we got to move to 5 because 4 is deprecated. But all of a sudden people are going, wow, 5.3 is amazing. And that's why I think it's gathering a lot of steam very quickly.
That's definitely what did it for me, being, you know, basic cake where we're compatible with PHP 4. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of true.
But you guys think that 5.3 is actually ready for production?
Yes. I've moved all my development and production, everything, over to 5.3.
Interesting. What about you, Davey? Oh my god, they killed Davey.
You bastard! Sorry, I muted myself and minimized the window and I lost it. I don't know if 5.3 is ready for production. I really haven't used it in that capacity. I do know that one of my developers accidentally upgraded and we didn't notice. So nothing broke between 5.2 and 5.3 for us. Maybe. I think it needs maybe a little bit longer. Another release. I know they're working on a new one. Maybe that'll be right there.
So it really sounds like what's been going on is you haven't been running the RCs and giving feedback to PHPQA.
I've been running the test. I've been compiling the RCs. I've been doing the make tests, but I haven't been using them for actual development yet.
Uh-oh. I see.
Beth, have you moved to 5.3 yet?
I have not. But now that I'm hearing all this stuff about it, I'm thinking, I better get going on that. But no, I haven't moved anything over yet. I am on 5, though. I did get rid of all my 4 stuff, at least.
Yeah, all our internal systems at MTA are also 5. Let's see, why are we not using 5.3? I remember that I did try to run some of our backend stuff on 5.3, and 5.3 blew up. But this was quite a while ago. I guess I just haven't gotten around to upgrading. I don't have any particular use for 5.3, to be honest. It seems to me that many of the features that are in 5.3 are going to be useful to a specific category of developers.
The awesome ones.
The most awesome ones, yes, absolutely.
And Nate.
No, I mean the awesome ones.
Oh.
I'm implied in that group.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't.
No, see, the code base that I work on has PHP 3 code on it. So the fact that pretty much worked in 5.3, they're doing a good job.
Wow.
Okay, moving on to another topic. There have been quite a few posts in the community lately on, once again, on commercial involvement in PHP. So I'll throw my 2 cents in there, with the caveat that a number of commercial companies that are involved in PHP are actually customers of the company I work for. Personally, I think that there's a lot of value to be taken from commercial involvement in PHP, as long as those companies that come into PHP do it with a minimum of respect for the way the community works. I think companies that have tried to get into the world of PHP and just do the typical marketing and sale thing that they would do in any other environment have been, how can I put it, rather unsuccessful in reaching their goals. And instead, there are companies that have approached this problem more from a perspective of how do they actually interact and communicate and collaborate with the community. And of course, you know, Microsoft is a prime example of that. And once they stopped trying to be the Borg and they started actually behaving like human beings, they found out that don't really hate them that much. They've actually brought a lot of value to the community itself. They've contributed a lot. They've done a lot of events. They're organizing a lot of events for the community. They are making it possible for the community to collaborate more tightly together. So personally, I don't have a problem with any kind of commercial environment built around PHP. I do have a problem with companies trying to appropriate PHP, with companies trying, may say unsuccessfully, to take control of PHP. That's, for one thing, it doesn't work because nobody will ever listen or care about them. it's also, I find, extremely disrespectful of the community. And there's one thing that I've learned about the community is that on the surface, we're all script kiddies and we have little, if any, power in the quote-unquote enterprise. But 5 or 6 years down the road, you may find that a few of us have indeed moved on to greener pastures and are in the position where we'll remember that the way you treated us, and we'll be in a position to sort of prevent you from getting into our enterprise. So there are some companies that just don't have this long-term view, and they will suffer if they don't understand. They don't make the minimum amount of effort that's required to understand how the community works.
You realize you're just reinforcing the mafia stereotype that we've started with the whole Don Marco. If you mess us up, we will take care of you.
We'll make him an offer he cannot refuse.
I think it's great that we have companies participating in PHP. You know, I ask Andy this at the Meet the Teams. You know, what are you guys doing to support PHP? And that was kind of a softball because I knew the answer to it. They actually pay for a couple of the core developers to work on PHP from time to time.
Shill.
Yeah, but still. I mean, you got to give them this. That's more than a lot of companies are doing. I mean, Yahoo, yeah, but look at the size of Yahoo compared to Zend. So I will give them credit for that. And in several of my talks, I make the point that if your company is making its money using PHP, you're standing on the shoulders of giants, and you owe it to the people that have come before you and the ones coming after you to contribute back. And if that is buying pizza at your local user group, or if that's just letting your employees participate in IRC during, during business hours, you've got to give back. But I love the fact that we now have, Microsoft, and you know, it's probably crass of me to point out that they were basically the bartender for CodeWorks. I mean, they followed us around to every city and threw parties for us, and you know, it was great. But the tendency is to look at Microsoft as pockets we can dip into instead of just, you know, partners that can contribute back. And I think we don't want to make that mistake. We want to see them as they're honestly trying to reach out to us, and we need to treat them with the respect that they are now treating us with.
I think there's really two ways that companies can interact with the community. There's, you know, from a business standpoint, sort of a more traditional business standpoint, going, there's all this free stuff and all these people willing to work for free, and we don't have to pay them anything, and we can just use and abuse the work these people are doing. And then the other side is what Cal is talking about, which is sort of this mutual respect of, you know, we'll give you something and you give us something and we'll work together to really further both of our goals for whatever needs and purposes.
I don't think that there's necessarily a need for, you know, for the I give you something and you give me something in the physical sense of things. I think it's great when a company, be it Microsoft, Adobe, you know, IBM, all these companies, when they contribute something to the PHP project that has not necessarily monetary value, but it's something that makes PHP better, makes it work better with their software. They're actually enriching the PHP community as much as they're opening new doors for themselves. That's why I think there's, you know, I don't personally have a problem with commercial entities working with PHP, just because at the end of the day, they make PHP better. You know, Oracle's work with PHP, it may make it possible for one of us in the near future to get a job where PHP has to interact with Oracle databases. You know, if they had not made the effort to sponsor the development of all the drivers and to educate the community, we may have missed out on that opportunity.
You know, generally what it sounds like is it's just a matter of being a good citizen of a community like any other.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
But you'd be surprised at how many companies don't understand that. And I'm talking companies like Microsoft that are new to the game, but also companies that have been around this community for a while are filled with people that, you know, it's not their week to hold the corporate clue, so they just don't understand.
Well, that's one of the reasons I asked my question at Meet the Teams. I stood up and I asked two questions. I asked the audience, I said, who here is involved in a users group, a PHP users group? And about half the people raised their hands. And then I turned and I put it to Zend and I said, you know, Zend, what can you do? What are you willing to do to support the community? And they turned it around immediately.
I got
said,
a question.
What?
Why did the head of sales answer that? Isn't that what, what's his name? Eli. Isn't that what Eli's for? It's early here, people. Isn't that what Eli's for?
Yes, quite possibly. But
do you really want the head of Zend sales coming there and buying pizza for you? And if you do, what do they expect, or what is he going to expect in return?
It seems a little disingenuous.
And honestly, I'm not even looking for that. I think Zend has, I mean, when you download the Zend framework or Zend Studio or you buy any of those things, you get on their mailing list. So if they could just put meeting announcements and say, hey, the DC PHP group is meeting this week into their monthly newsletter, that would be amazing because their interests are served by connecting those PHP developers up with the user groups, because then those people say, oh, how'd you find out about the user group? And they say, oh, well, Zend told us about it. And Zend benefits mm-hmm. from having more PHP developers out there. And I'd like to see them step up on that in that regard.
I honestly have no problem with, you know, a salesperson coming to a user group and, you know, saying, hey, you know, we want to educate you about our products that may make you work smarter and work better and do more. I mean, everybody wants to do that.
The position of developer evangelist exists.
Yeah. And I will give this to Microsoft. Now, I don't know all of the developer evangelists, but I know Josh Holmes, and I've met Glenn Gordon a couple times. But Josh understands that Microsoft is not there to sell copies of Windows servers or sell copies of Visual Studio, that Microsoft's participation is more of a soft branding thing. And he really gets that, and he gets the value of that. And Josh is one of the reasons. I mean, we always talk about Joe Stagner, and Joe is still a great friend and still a friend of the PHP community. But Josh is one of the other ones inside Microsoft that really seems to understand how to market to user groups and especially PHP user groups.
And Josh is good people.
Well, yeah, and Josh it's not marketing though. I mean, it's engagement. It's showing up and saying. I mean, there's been numerous times where I've been in discussions with them and I'm like, well, you know, the Microsoft tools don't do this. He goes, well, no, actually you're wrong. Here, check this out. And I go, oh,
that's marketing is.
Yeah.
It is marketing.
Yeah, I guess so. It's not sort of the traditional form of marketing that I guess other organizations try to use on us.
Right. And I think he didn't say, yes, the tool does this, but I'm going to need your email address so you before you can download how to do it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot of companies miss out when they come to promote their products to developers. They come with the typical sales pitch of, you should buy this because we have all these shiny features, you know, but if those aren't features we need, then it's not solving our problem. And what marketers really need to find out is, what are our problems? And then how does their product solve our problem?
Right.
And come at it from that angle.
Exactly. And what Microsoft, and to a certain degree also Adobe and Oracle, have done well there, it's been to actually shut up and listen. Rather than telling us what is so great about their products, they've come to us, they've listened to what our problems are, and they're trying to tell us, well, this is where our product makes things easier for you.
And we talk about Microsoft all this time, but in reality, Chris Jones from Oracle, Mike Potter from Adobe, these guys have been doing this for a long time. I think we keep talking about Microsoft because we're all very surprised that they are now at the party. But Oracle with Chris Jones has been quietly listening and trying to contribute back and help their interests are aligned with PHP, and that's understandable. And Adobe has done the same. Mike Potter has been a friend of the PHP community, and you know, these guys have been there all along. But Microsoft, because they're new to the party and everybody just so surprised that they're here, they seem to get all the attention these days.
Well, and they're doing it in a very big way.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah, but I'm convinced that it's paying off for them because I don't the problem. I think the problem that they're going to have internally is to justify it with measurement. But I know that because of the work that they have done, there are a whole bunch of us who've actually tried to give Windows 7 a meaningful go. And, you know, I installed Windows 7 primarily because I saw it at CodeWorks running on, I can't remember if it was Josh's or somebody else's laptop, and it looked good enough that I wanted to give it a try. It was, I can't remember exactly what it was doing, but it was doing some code editing with it that it wasn't Visual Studio. It might have had a copy of Zen Studio or of NetBeans. And was just editing some PHP code, and I said, oh, wow, this looks really good. And that's what led me to give it a try. And I know that a whole bunch of people around me have done exactly the same thing. And, you know, I'm going to buy a copy of Windows 7 tomorrow. Not because Microsoft is one of my clients, not because they're paying me to say that, not because they've plied me with booze, but because they've participated without being invasive. They've listened. They've showed me that what they have has value for me, and I wanted to give it a try.
Well, I mean, to sort of be blunt in this regard, Microsoft completely and totally dropped off my radar about 4 or 5 years ago. They became totally irrelevant to me. Not in a bad way, just because it was just a matter of, well, they weren't innovating in the space that we are working in, or at least not to my knowledge that they were. And now in the past, you know, year and a half maybe, they've started showing up, and they're like, oh no, we've got these cool toys. And I saw a couple during the CodeWorks series. I saw numerous demos of Silverlight 3. That's kind of nifty. I mean, there's some cool stuff going on there. Not entirely useful to me yet, but I see how it's coming and how it can be useful. And Josh and those guys have hooked us up with the website Spark, or I forget which program it is.
Yeah, website Spark.
Spark, okay. And now in Web to Project, we're actually using that to test compatibility to see, okay, are we compatible with SQL Server? We're also testing with Oracle and Postgres because they're back in the game. You know, Microsoft is interesting again.
Right.
Actually,
well,
on
to bring
that,
this back around to
on that
to,
you know, note. Cal, can people ask you about your Microsoft stack?
Oh, well, about my Microsoft stack?
Yeah, is that cool to do here?
Okay. I guess I'm not sure what stack I have other than I'm running Windows 7.
No.
The same reason Marco is. I saw it running and I said, you know, I got to have this. So I, you know, rushed right over to one of my Microsoft friends and says, give me a free copy. So,
no, I just
you bastard. You didn't.
The website Spark program. You know, Mark, I've got an extra copy if you want it.
No, I've got a website. I'm a website Spark partner, and not because I get anything out of it. Simply because I think it's a good program for PHP developers that I talk to. So if you're listening out there and you want to be involved in website Spark, email me and I will be happy to send you a URL so you can join.
There doesn't seem to be a website Spark for open source projects. It's business. I mean, I understand that because they're trying to make money, but, you know.
Right.
You hit
the nail on the head. They're trying to make money with this. They're trying to get small companies involved in deploying on Windows and getting them used to that idea. And so they're basically giving them the tools they need.
And the deal for that is very good.
If PHPB, for example, is testing and can say, you know, we work with Windows, then smaller businesses may go out and buy Windows Server to run their PHPBB systems on.
A lot of those companies are just using basically repurposed desktops. And so they won't try and figure out how to use Linux because, well, they know how to run Windows locally and everything like that on their desktop. Okay, they'll do that for their internal networks and they'll start playing with that. Instead of trying to expand their skill sets and adventure in the new areas that they don't know what the hell is going on with.
Right. PHP Architect, incidentally, is also a website Spark partner. So if you want to be invited in the project, you can either drop Cal an email or drop me an email. Just to show you how unbiased we are in dealing with Microsoft. But, you know, moving away from Microsoft for a moment, the same experience could easily apply to Adobe. A lot of people have been introduced to Adobe Flex and Air through some of the initiatives that Adobe has undertaken in the PHP community. For example, Cal and I, just by coincidence, happened to end up presenting this tutorial on Flex and Air at the CodeWorks series, and it was a great experience for me. It was nothing, you know, it wasn't anything special, but we decided to go into this tutorial and show people this is how we actually do program in using Flex. And we went in there with absolutely no pre-prepared code, you know, a vague idea of what we wanted to do, but we also let the audience sort of guide us along, and we were building this application live together with the audience. And I don't know about Cal, but it was a really good experience for me. It was fun. It was somewhat scary to walk into a presentation knowing that for the next 2 hours, everybody is going to see you make mistakes, typing, make mistakes because you don't know what you're doing or you're thinking you're doing that something works in some particular way. And you find out that, no, it really works some other way. But I think that it was a good experience for the audience as well. And a lot of the people we talked to were interested in Flex, were interested in Air after this. They saw us fumble about for a couple hours. And you know, this was not because Adobe was trying to push the product on them. It was because they saw two guys building an application in front of them and showing them what the platform could actually do. And we always had a pretty good crowd, didn't we, Cal?
Oh, yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, it was a really good crowd. And, you know, I'd worked with Flex before in the previous version and have always thought that it's a very good fit for PHP developers. Because as PHP developers, usually our only front end is HTML. And with Flex, we have a lot more options, but I've always hated Flash. So this was an argument Kathy and I always got into was developers cannot program in a timeline paradigm. So Flex gives me that ability. But, you know, I think it's a great tool for PHP developers.
Absolutely. Let's see, what else do we have on the list here? As you probably know by now, when you do get your hands on this episode of the podcast, we've just announced our upcoming Tech 10 conference, which you can find out more about at tech.phparch.com. Tech 10 will take place again in Chicago towards the end of May of 2010, and the call for papers is currently open. The initial thought was to do a one-day call for papers just to see if we do get the same amount of people submitting as we usually do, since everybody always submits after the end of the call for paper. But the call for paper is going to be open for a while. You can just check it out. If you have a good idea, even if you've never talked before, we want to hear from you. Drop us a note, make a proposal. This is all how everybody that's speaking at conferences today got started. None of us got started as fully developed speakers. We just walk up to the stage one day and start talking. We all started with probably some very bad presentations.
Except for me.
Except for you.
Just saying.
Yeah, of course. We all very much started. I'm just shaking my head right now. We all just...
the ego of some people, I swear. Yeah,
I know, like, who? I don't know who these people are, but...
I know. All I know is that your window inside my Skype is like twice the size of everybody else's.
It's to get his whole head in the frame.
I know. And so if you've never seen Nate, I'll tell you exactly how you can recognize him at the next conference. Just look out for the noise of the massive head scraping through the door. Sorry, so going back to the call for papers, if you have a good idea, we want to hear from you. Give it a try. Keith will be organizing our own conference.
And if you've got a bad idea, then Keith wants to hear from you.
That's right. So if you've never submitted to a conference proper, maybe you will be interested in the AMP conference. But this is the way everybody here has gotten involved in speaking for the community. And as I said, we all started with probably very horrible presentations, and we just got better mostly through the merciless nagging of our peers.
Well, hey, I want to circle back around to UNCON. I know, you know, Zen this year charged $99 for the UNCON and the exhibit hall. How long is it before we quit kidding ourselves and we just do away with the traditional conference? You know, everybody ponies up $100 and you show up with your slide deck. I mean, is that where we're headed? Is the UNCON? Because, I mean, the UNCON at ZenCon is growing in popularity. I mean, it's not like just that little thing that they were doing over on the side. It's mainstream now.
Personally, I think one of the things that would sort of stand in the way of that is the fact that it's in San Francisco, and in order for a lot of people to get the time off or to get companies to pay for the travel or whatever, the bosses want to see some sort of schedule. They want to say, okay, so what sessions are you going to go to? And to not have any schedule set until once you get there, or even a week or two in advance, I think that's going to be a huge hurdle to overcome. Now, doing something along the lines of an UNCON track at CodeWorks, where we're traveling from city to city, I think that's a lot more feasible, and I think that's a lot lower barrier to overcome, but I think it'd be a tough, tough sell.
The other issue with the UNCONference is, you get some amazing, phenomenal talks that are just like diamonds in the rough. There are also some really not so great ones. So it's kind of hit or miss.
Well, and I have to agree with Cal, actually. We have people almost every year who come to our conferences and actually ask the speakers to sign their programs so that they can show their bosses that they've actually been at the conference and they've attended the talk.
Wow.
Yes. Because, of course...
It's a good thing my boss never did that.
I don't want to necessarily talk behind anybody's back, but it's amazing to me that there are still managers, people with the signatures on checks that somehow have managed to convince themselves that people who go to a conference should have no social interaction whatsoever. There's still this attitude that going to a conference should be akin to going to a funeral. You walk there, listen to the sermon, and leave.
Well, even beyond that, it's a freaking permission slip. You're getting them to say, yes, this person was there, they did attend. And come on, we're not 6-year-olds.
No, exactly. And everybody will tell you that, you know, the sessions are important. You're obviously going there to learn, but you don't learn by just sitting around and listening to somebody, because you can do that by watching a webcast or listening to a podcast, except for this podcast where you don't learn anything. The value in a conference is in the interaction.
The interactions are what you take home with you. I mean, sure, you may remember some of the knowledge that you get, or you may remember at least the topic of the talk you went to so you can look it up again later. But the contacts that you make, that's what's really going to help you when you're sitting there trying to solve out this puzzle and you can't find a solution for it, or you can't get it done fast enough or under budget, and you put feelers out to your contacts and you say, hey, how can we get this done? And that's what I think is the most beneficial thing from a conference.
Exactly.
Are those connections that you make with other people.
Exactly. And in fact, I was just talking to Kala maybe a week or so ago, and we were talking about what I call the PHP AIDS Society. sort of relatively tightly knit group of people that only really meet each other at conferences, that have met for the first time at conferences, but they're sort of like a support group when you're just not having a good day or somebody's really driving you insane. You open up a chat window and you vent to that person, and you know that conversation is going to stay private, that the advice you're going to get is good because you've had that opportunity to interact with them in an informal environment where there was nothing at stake. And that's really what the conference is. I don't want to say that conferences should not have talks, but certainly to say that attending a conference just has to be sitting in front of a guy drone on for 45 minutes to an hour is, in my opinion, silly.
I think the talk should really be seen as like a jumping up point for like-minded people to start interactions.
Yes.
Completely agreed.
Yes, very good.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point. And in fact, when you do go to a conference, you know, often you'll be attending sessions during the day, and then in the evening there will be a whole bunch of people having drinks, and they'll be talking about some of the topics that were covered throughout the day.
When you start having drinks, that's when the real story comes out.
Good or bad, yes.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, the whole Google Wave thing that's been coming out, maybe it would be kind of neat to have a way for people to write collaborative notes on the talks, because nobody remembers the whole thing, right?
Well, that's an idea.
There were a couple people at ZenCon that did that. Guy from Google, Omni, I forget his last name, but he had a Wave going on from the very first tutorial session on, and he was taking notes. There were another 6 or 8 different people in the same group chatting and going on. I followed it for the first day, but then after that I had to run around doing UnCon stuff. But it looked like it was a pretty robust thing. I don't know how to find a link for that, but his name's Adams, Omni Adams. If you look him up, you might be able to find the link to the Wave.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think there's definitely value in having more social tools at conferences. That's something that we're trying to explore very cautiously for Tech 10. But there's definitely a place where social media can have can contribute to making conferences better and more dynamic. But
Twitter proves the point. I mean, how do we know to meet up for dinner or go to a bar? I mean, it's Twitter.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But that's not necessarily a collaborative tool, though. You certainly create more of an atmosphere around the event. And yes, you can, get organized for going to dinner and stuff like that. But I think there's a really good opportunity, even for the speakers, because you can't see the one thing that really, really, really upsets me when I'm speaking at the conference or I'm giving a webcast or a tutorial over the web is the fact that I know that people are tweeting about what I'm saying, and I don't care that the fact that they feel the need to be passive aggressive and use Twitter instead of raising their hands and using their voice box. What upsets me is the fact that what they are saying the gossip that they're making could actually bring some sort of value to my talk. And so things like having a wave for a talk or something, some collaborative environment where people can share notes and make notes throughout the talk can be very helpful from the point of view of the speaker, if the speaker also has access to it. Because, you know, I don't understand why people don't feel comfortable raising their hand and asking questions, or, you know, telling the speaker, you're doing it wrong.
Oh, wait, I get that all the time. People don't have a problem telling me that at all.
I don't have that problem.
Well, some of the stuff isn't stuff you can just raise your hand to do. I mean, I've been in IRC lots of times where there's a presenter talking and they say, oh, and there's this article from so-and-so. And somebody in IRC will go ahead and drop the link. And they say, this is the article they're talking about. So it's a great way to supplement things. Problem with IRC, though, is that it's transitory. I mean, you can't log in 3 hours later and keep an eye on, have an idea of what was going on when. It's just not.
I've just been tweeting all of this.
Awesome. I appreciate that.
I think
go ahead, David.
The other thing is exactly what Keith is saying. I think that there are spin-off conversations, and obviously speakers have, you know, a set kind of flow to where they're going, and they don't want to be too far distracted. But there certainly could be better ways to go off on a tangent and promote discussions on tangents.
Right. And the other problem is, of course, that not everybody is aware that these channels are available, and of course the fact that sometimes internet access is a problem. Not that I would know anything about that.
Not at conferences.
Yeah.
Yes.
Internet's always great at conferences.
I'm keeping my mouth shut.
Usually the conference organizer has at least a 28.8 modem set up, you know,
right.
Possibly even, you know, more. So.
Actually, I was at Dev Days DC this week for Stack Overflow, that's Joel Spolsky's latest thing, and the internet was rock solid the entire time. I was sincerely impressed.
It's probably because Joel uses Windows.
At ZenCon, it was pretty solid. Also, it was not always blindingly fast, but you know it was always on. And mm-hmm. Come on, let's face it, that's a win for most conferences.
Yeah, that's respectable.
I'm just being silent here.
Yeah, I've still got memories of the CodeWorks Atlanta, where you were talking about the Adobe session, and hey, let's do live coding, and hey, let's make Cal do live coding, and hey, let's bail on Cal before the internet goes out on the live coding session.
Man, that Marco guy is can't imagine that.
It's good times.
I'm just making notes. Don't worry. Yeah, your accommodations for Tech 10 are deteriorating rapidly.
You're going to be rooming with Shiflet. You know what he thinks of you.
Oh, jeez, no. I've only got one good foot left.
Okay. Beth, do you want to tell us about what's coming down the pipe at PHP Architect?
Sure. PHP Architect, we've got the October issue coming out, hopefully before the end of October.
Oh, and, thank you. Thank you very much.
And so we are talking about graphic manipulation, and so we actually have an GMagic article and an ImageMagick article. So we have dueling graphics extensions, so that was kind of exciting. And we have, speaking of framework shootouts, we have Alchitect. So if you're looking for a very simple framework to use, very quick to set up and quick to get going, Alchitect was a pretty interesting one. And we have some interesting stuff on how you can use PHP as workflow glue for your for all of your applications in your environment at work. So sort of an enterprise level thing. Little teaser for our December enterprise issue. So check that out.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Oh, hey, can I plug one thing?
No.
You talked about, oh, come on. You talked about...
why did you ask me then? You're doing it anyway.
I asked you so I could insert myself into the conversation. You were talking about GMagick, and by the time this releases, we'll have a complimentary article on GMagick on Tech Portal, written by the same guy. And he said it is to go. It's in addition to the article that's going on in PHP Architect, which is of course the most important one.
Of course.
Of course.
All right. I think that's all we have time for today. It's been a pleasure having you here. Thank you very much, Cal, Davey, Nate, Keith, and Beth. It's been great to have you here. It's been great to have you here as well, if you're still listening on to this extra long episode of the PHP Architect podcast. As always, this podcast will have a dedicated page on our website. Just go to phparch.com/podcast, and you can find more links about the things we've talked about tonight. You can leave us comments, tell us how horribly boring we've been this time. So next time we'll come up with an even more interesting retort. And until the next episode, stay safe and keep coding. Thank you.
Expecting something here? Go away.